Hey everybody, this is the Martell and Friends podcast. Today I have the Mathis twins with me. Thanks for coming, guys.
Of course, brother. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Appreciate it.
Of course.
I get to see this skyline that I never get to see. So it's definitely dope to be here and see it. So
yeah, 100%. For everybody that's listening, can you guys break down, give a little bit of context, 30,000 foot view before we just start chopping it up about what you guys do?
Gotcha. We're the Mathis twins. We born and raised in Miami. We had a cleaning company. We sold that cleaning company. We got into real estate investing 8 years ago. We've done over 500 transactions from wholesaling houses, fixing and flipping, and buying rental properties. We also have an education company and our own podcast as well. So that's what we got going on right now.
Gotcha.
And we are lucky to be a friend of Mr. Martell himself.
Yes. It is called the Martell and Friends podcast. Exactly. All right, cool. And then you guys are doing deals, because I think you guys had a wholesaling company too.
Yep.
Are you guys still doing that, like, in 2024?
Yeah, we're still doing that in 2024. We're wholesaling across the country, and then we're buying fix and flips and rentals only in South Florida.
Gotcha. And still buying in South Florida.
Yes, we're still buying in South Florida today. As we shoot this beginning of February, in January alone, we purchased $4.5 million worth of real estate in South Florida, and all of them are great deals. So you can still buy in South Florida, just got to know how to find them.
Do you think somebody investing in real estate today with no money could, like, raise money and buy deals in South Florida, or would you recommend out of state, or like?
No, so for sure, like Jerm just said, we've been investing here for the past 8 years and we're still finding really good deals. So for us, we fund all of our deals using other people's money. So we raise private money to either buy the house and to do the fix and flip. And the good thing about South Florida, the margins are sexy, man. So I don't know about other markets, but when it comes to fixing and flipping here, the margins are just sexy.
But to answer your question, somebody starting out, we have a philosophy, wherever you feel as though you can find deals, go and find deals. There are people that we buy from, newer wholesalers, and they're finding deals here, and they're able to find those deals. It's just, it takes a little bit more extra hustle on their part than it takes us. So I do think this is a market where a newbie can come and thrive if they have the hustle. Because as you know, a lot of people don't have that hustle that's really needed to go out and get it.
100%. So. And then also raising money. Like, what is the average numbers for deals that you're doing here in South, like, for the fix and flips?
Yeah. Got you. So our average buy price, we're buying at about $350,000 to $400,000. So everything, let me put some context. Everything that we buy is entry level. We don't do any high end. We don't do any luxury as of right now. So the entry prices for us that we're buying at is about $350,000 to $400,000. We're putting anywhere from $50,000 to $80,000 into the house because we do all cosmetic flips. And we're selling those houses at between, let's call it $500,000 to $650,000 on average.
Gotcha. So, and how long start to finish, like months or days?
So because our strategy is all cosmetic houses, we want to be in and out of houses within 3 to 4 months. So on average, it's taking us about, let's call it 4 to 6 months from time we buy the house until the time that we sell it.
Okay.
Yeah. But part of the reason why it's taking even longer now is the permitting process in Miami. Yeah. As we talk with more people throughout the country, we're understanding like how dreadful this permitting process is down here.
So, question for you though. I know you flip houses in other parts of the country. What is it like for you? Like how long does it take you from time to buy to sell on average?
And explain the market too, because I definitely want to know this.
Okay, so for us, way different. Yeah. Never dealt with permits ever.
That's crazy to hear that.
Never dealt with permits.
Out of the thousand of flips you've done.
Yeah, 660 flips, 350 wholesales, never had to deal with like permits or anything like that. Little permits, like new hot water tank, whatever, some dumb shit. But the average renovation for us was $30,000. In a lot of these cities like Memphis, Tennessee, you can do a $25,000 renovation or less, $25,000 interior renovation or less without a general contractor's permit.
Wow.
So you can just have like unlicensed. So then talk about like, why is it so cheap to flip a house in Memphis?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anybody and their mom could go and become a construction company and make a Yelp account and like, we only do construction below 25K.
Yeah.
Cool. So you just created all this competition, supply and demand. Now all the prices are super low
there's no code enforcement or anything in these markets that you operate in?
There is code enforcement and there are like occupancy permits, occupancy inspections.
Got you.
But it's more on like, because you're renting. Dude, if I was flipping the houses, there'd be nothing. Hardly anything. It's also too because are you guys moving walls and stuff like that, or is
We all cosmetic floors, paint, kitchen, bathrooms, sometimes roofs.
That's it.
That's like, it. Bro.
We do all cosmetic.
Okay, that's exactly what we do. And yeah, we never. So you have to like tell the city like, hey, we're renovating this property and cleaning it up. And it's like a $40,000 renovation. Here's all the stuff we're doing, and like they have to come and approve it.
So is this like you pull permits for different areas of the house? So if you're putting in a new kitchen, you need permits. You're putting in a new bathroom, you need permits.
That's in South Florida.
That's in South Florida. Yeah. Are you doing? You're changing out the electrical meter and the electrical panel. You're putting permits.
Okay.
So AC work. If you're changing out the AC systems or installing like duct works and stuff, you need permits for those things.
Okay. Yeah. So some of the major systems. In these markets, yes, you do.
Okay.
But again, that's like, we're going to send somebody out to like inspect, just make sure you did it right.
Yeah.
And like, cool, waive it, whatever. It's like the permit is for like 5K of work. It's not like for flooring or like kitchen or anything
so
like that.
It's not for flooring. The issue here is it takes, you apply for the permit and it takes, depending on what city you're in, it's taking you anywhere from 30 days to the worst city we've been in, which is Hollywood. It took 10 months for them to approve the permit so we can get started with the work.
Oh my god,
don't be putting the people out there. They no, I don't need nobody knocking on the door.
they horrible, man.
Nah, they all horrible though. They definitely are horrible.
Wow.
Like 10 months to approve permits, bro.
Yeah, like for us, for occupancy inspection, for example, it'll take like maybe like 2 or 3 weeks, maybe 2 weeks for the city to come out the first time. They'll give you a list of stuff, and then cool, they'll like come out, or you send them photos and they kind of just auto approve it. Like, oh, you did this, you fixed this hole or whatever, and like,
wow. I think we may need to find a different
market. I was just thinking that we coming to Memphis.
How many markets are you in right now?
Right now, the most active, like the most popular markets, we're in like 4 of them.
Okay.
But we have been in like probably like 15 to 20 different places that we've tested out.
Is that flipping houses or wholesaling?
Flipping houses.
Okay, gotcha.
Why did you scale back to only 4?
Because the juice wasn't worth the squeeze. And some of these markets like Cincinnati. So Cincinnati, you guys would love Cincinnati. You guys could probably like destroy there.
Yeah.
If you like South Florida, you're a little bit cheaper. The market's growing like crazy and you wouldn't have to compete with anybody.
Are you serious? It's crazy you say that because a dude just sent me a deal yesterday, 8 units in Cincinnati. And the average price, like, what's the average price point you see in Cincinnati?
150, 180.
We may have found, because we were actually looking for a market to go and buy more rentals, because South Florida is just like, last year we brought 2 or 3 rentals and we wanted to buy way more. It just doesn't make sense with the numbers.
Yeah.
With prices raising, insurance going crazy, property taxes going crazy. You may have just given us another gym on Martell's and Friends, guys.
So for us, for rentals, we want to buy at least 20 doors a year. And that's just us. No outside investors, because our rentals are our retirement plan, right?
Yeah.
We want to just keep buying more and more rentals, keep increasing that cash flow. So if we buy 20 a year, we 32 now. Just think about how many we'll have when we're 50, 60, right? If we buy 20 a year.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think, so you guys are doing the fix and flip here in your local market. You're going to take that money, avoid taxes by buying out of state and like doing like bonus depreciation or something on them.
No, that's for sure the plan, because like we wholesale across the country, and you know, we truly believe exposure leads to expansion. Once we started to see how other markets operate, it was like, wow.
Yeah,
South Florida is like really its own country, its own world.
Yeah.
So we definitely want to start buying rentals.
Yeah.
In other markets, we're trying to figure out what is that right market, but we may just found it.
Yeah.
So we have rentals here. I think we have 29 total doors here, and they cash flow really, really well.
Yeah, I remember.
And then
too,
the beautiful thing about buying rentals here is if we needed to sell a rental within a week, it's sold, and we can close within 3 weeks.
That's true.
So that's the one thing I do love about the South Florida market. It's so, like, the buyers are wanting to be here, whether it's people that's coming in from other states or international buyers that are buying these properties. So if we ever needed to disposition an asset, it sells quick.
Yeah, that's true. Have you guys ever thought about liquidating, once you find that market out of state, liquidating the Florida stuff to buy more out there?
As of right now, it's a hard no. I wanted to liquidate not because of going in a different market. I wanted to liquidate because dealing with tenants and property managers is a headache, and I'm responsible for that because, you know, we have division of responsibilities. But I just don't see us selling these properties down here because I do believe that this is the new capital of the world. You see all these companies coming in. You see all these big time names coming in. So I think owning real estate here in the long run would definitely benefit us.
Yeah,
we make
that's
decent.
True.
We don't make Antoine Martel type money, but we make decent money to be able to go and put it in different markets.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
missed that one.
God. Do you own any rentals?
So at one point I had around 250 at the height of it, but before the interest rates started going up, we were just getting insane offers on all of our stuff, so we sold pretty much all of it.
Oh wow.
We had like 50 or 60 left that we were trying to sell and trying to do a portfolio refinance to pay off the private money we had on it. Yeah. He ended up not wanting to refi and taking the houses back, so we like pretty much warranty deed, quit claim deed the houses to him to just pay off the loan. So then we were left with like 20 to 30 houses, and we just slowly been selling the rest of them because I've been taking a lot of that money and putting it into Flip System, into the software, to hiring, to like grow the business instead.
So you're 100, like that's one thing that I definitely want your audience to understand, the power of focus and being 100% in on something.
Yeah.
And that's truly something that I admire when I see somebody who's willing to go all in behind something that they believe in. Mm. So if you guys have been on the fence about Flip System, go get that Flip System.
Question for you though. You said the last 50 to 60 instead of selling them. So you had one investor who had a loan on all those properties?
Yeah, he had like $5 million loaned out to us.
Oh, wow.
Can I meet him? I'm looking to raise some capital.
I need his contact. Yeah.
So. But wait, what made you guys have, I'm not understanding that. What made you guys just give him the deeds back as opposed to just selling them and paying him out that way?
It was taking too long, and then he didn't want the money back. He would actually just prefer, because we didn't have any other. It was, he lent us $5 million. We bought a bunch of houses with his money, so there was no other debt on it. Mm. So the houses were free and clear, and we were like, well, if you don't want to wait for us to refi, or at that point the interest rates were kind of going up.
Yeah,
it was starting to turn. And so I was like, you know, we can refinance it. We're going to be at a 6% or 7% interest rate. I'm like, you know, it's not going to make that much money, and we're going to have to split the profits because we were like 50-50 joint ventures on it. And so he didn't really like that. And then I was like, okay, well, if you don't like that, I mean, the other option is me to give you the houses, give me my equity back out of the deal, and we can do that. And out of the 50 houses, let's say, I'll give you 40 back. I'll keep 10. I'll go do whatever I want with my 10. You keep your 40. So that's the kind of deal we worked out. But I mean, you got to get creative when that was like the weirdest thing we've ever seen with the interest rates going from 3 or 4 to 6 or 7. Right. And I think we're still there. I think you have to kind of play around with all those investors. I mean, you guys raised a lot of private money too.
Yeah.
And it was like, you had to have some hard conversations with some people during that year. And even up till now, I mean, still there's shit that's not selling because of the interest rates, or you bought it wrong and didn't anticipate the interest
rate
increase.
Not in the South Florida market. That's one thing I love about that South Florida market. We know multiple people across the country, and they've struggled with dispositioning assets and going through those struggles. We never once felt that at all, and we still haven't felt that regardless of what the interest rates are.
That's one thing
that I do love about being in this market. It's tough to buy in, but once you get your hands on something, you are able to sell it like this. Mm-hmm. We never really felt anything.
And a lot of markets out there are like that too. It's interesting because some of the markets that are the hardest to get in are the ones that are easiest to sell. So when people join Flip System too, they're like, I want to find a market where I can sell the houses super fast and I can rent them out and there's a ton of inventory. And I'm like, let me know when you find that place. Like, it's like you kind of have to choose one. And that's why I feel like there's a lot of good markets for retail fix and flips.
Yep.
There's a lot of good markets for purely buy and hold, but good luck selling it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Detroit's a great example. Super high cash flow, tons of deals. Okay, cool. It's not that easy to then go and sell a retail fix and flip in Detroit. As easy as if you can find a cash flowing rental in Cincinnati, Columbus, Ohio. I mean, that's Cleveland. Those things will sell like hotcakes.
Yeah.
But it's kind of you got to, with all these markets, you kind of got to choose one. It's like, what strategy you want to do?
How did you guys determine which markets you're going to go into and like really build out and scale?
So what we would do is we started off in Memphis. We slowly went to Cleveland, Ohio. And that was purely just like by following other people, word of mouth, talking to people, figuring out what was working, and then finding a good team. Like I always say this, like if I had like the best team ever in Miami, like the best realtor who can find the deals, the best contractor, the best whatever, whatever, like I can make Miami or Florida work.
Yeah.
So even though it's a super hard market to get into, I feel like if you have the right team, you can essentially get into any market USA. So that's kind of how we would position, is like, we would go find a great market, Louisville, Kentucky. We would call property managers, realtors, contractors, couldn't find anybody good. It's like, all right, like it's worthless that I can find deals on Zillow and Redfin that are amazing if I don't have the right team on the ground to go and like execute those deals. So it really was a lot of trial and error and a lot of building these teams on the ground to find out which ones.
So all of us here know how hard it is to build the real business with systems, processes. What are the top two things you learned in that process of building out teams and going through that whole process of building up your company the way that you did?
That the only way to test a team on the ground is by trial and error. Like, I think there's a lot of people online that are like, and you guys probably experienced this too, but like, these are the 10 questions to ask your property manager to never incorporate, like, and to never encounter a problem ever again. It's like fucking bullshit, right? You know, the only way, I'd rather you have ask no questions or just ask basic questions. What do you guys charge? How many doors? What software do you use? Whatever. Yeah. And then, you know, test them out with one house, test them out with a house with a 5K renovation that's 50K. So you limit your downside. Yeah. And then you could slowly scale it up, slowly start adding more and more deals to the pipeline and all that kind of stuff. But that's the one thing I've learned, is you have to just trial and error these people and test them out with like a small ass deal. And then you slowly scale it up and build it up with those people.
What has been the biggest struggle with doing flips in other markets?
Besides the team?
Because I know that's number one.
Besides the team, so the team is definitely the hardest. After that, if you had an amazing team, the thing would just be pure the scale of growing the business to make enough money. Because, all right, you guys do flips here. Let's say you guys make 50 or 100K profit per deal, just estimated. For us in the Midwest, when we do houses, we'll make $10,000 to $20,000 per deal.
On a flip?
On a retail fix, a turnkey fix and flip.
Okay.
Retail fix and flip, you can make more money.
Okay.
$20,000 to $30,000. But again, no permitting, much faster.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. So you guys make way more money, but you're putting way more in.
Yeah.
We out of state put way less money in, way lower profit, but a great margin. Because you're only putting in 20, 30K on a deal, but you're making 20, 30K profit. Mm-hmm. Turnkey fix and flip, you're putting in 25K, making 15K profit. Like, it's a damn good return.
Yeah.
So with that being said, I think as you scale up a business out of state, that's the problem, is that like you have to do multiple deals a month to make a significant, or at least one deal per month. And then it becomes like, of like you, the entrepreneur, like, can you grow a business or a team or the systems or the process? Because sure, your team can figure all this shit out, but it's like, can you raise enough money at enough volume? Can you manage the accounting and bookkeeping? Can you blah, blah, blah? So in order to make a couple hundred grand a year, you really have to. Yeah. It's not just like, I do two deals a year and I do it with pencil and paper. Yeah. Like, you can't. All that shit goes out the window. Yeah. You have to like build a process.
We know how to raise money. You just brought it up again.
Yeah.
How have you been able to raise money for your deals over the years, and how have you found the investors, and how have you raised the money?
Yeah, and I want to know how you guys did too, because I saw you guys just came out with a podcast on that as well.
Yeah.
For me, raising money has been all through organic social media content.
Wow.
Posting online and then doing outreach on Bigger Pockets direct messages back in the day. Bigger Pockets direct messages, meetups, it's all been like one-on-one combat. The only thing I did at scale to raise money, but that's the thing, you can't really do anything at scale to raise money, or else the SEC starts getting involved. So because it all has to be like personal relationship. It really has been, it was like messaging somebody on Bigger Pockets, hey, want to get a coffee, I see you're a real estate investor in Miami or LA or whatever the case may be. Cool. It's no pitch at all. It's literally just us sitting down. What do you do? Oh, this is what I do. Wow, that's interesting. You invest out of state? Yeah. Cool. Want to do a deal together? Yeah. Like, that's how that process begins. But what about you guys?
First of all, it's great to have friends that actually do dope stuff. because I never thought about reaching out to people in bigger pockets. And it's, I'm sure they have a massive network of people that we could just tap into.
Oh,
I've never thought about that until now. Like, what? Wow, like, we've never done that. Yeah. I've never even heard that before.
Yeah. You're kidding. Dude, I have literally, I scaled it up so much, I have like 5 banned Bigger Pockets accounts because I was messaging too many people. Legit. Wow. And we just, I don't know if you saw, it was just on the Bigger Pockets podcast.
Yeah. No, I didn't see it.
Yeah. We started running ads on Bigger Pockets forums.
Oh, wow.
And so we've like gone heavy because a lot of the people with Flip System, and I'm sure like Expose and Expand, which we can chat about later too, but like, dude, you start anything real estate related, fucking Bigger Pockets first fucking thing.
Yeah.
Then who talks about it? People that don't know anything about real estate investing
go
on Bigger Pockets and they're like, yeah, you don't have to join Flip System to buy a team. You can build a team yourself. No shit, Sherlock.
Yeah.
Like, but they're not doing it.
Yeah.
Go and try to do it yourself and then call us in 6 months.
Like, yeah.
Please go try. But you know, you're dealing with all these internet trolls. But anyways, Bigger Pockets is great. You can put in your zip code. You can find other local people. It literally gives you a list of 3,000 people in Miami that are interested in real estate investing that want to invest.
Wow.
Dude.
This is why I don't mind driving to come and see you. We find out something unique every – this was legit worth the drive because I've never even thought about it. Like, never. Because the way that we raise money is just always from people that had their own capital, rich people. So we went out. I think we've done a good job of just talking to people, helping them understand – how we do what we do, and people just make, we've been able to raise.
I think, let me give you more context. So the first private money lender we had, we found them at a RIA meeting. So a real estate investors meetup. Mm-hmm. So she was there, and she said, hey, man, my husband, we're looking to invest into real estate. And we started to tell her, like, hey, you sure you want to do the investing? Because you got to manage the team, you got to do this, you got to do that. And for us, we started to understand her profile. They worked jobs, and they made their money their jobs. I mean, she never really told us what she did, but I think it was like employee number 10 at Google or something.
Oh shit!
Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that.
No, they got real money, bro.
Yeah. So we met them, and they started lending us money. And then I think too, understanding the network effect, because like rich people know other rich people, and then from there it just started to spread like wildfire. And then one of our mentors, he knew some investors that wanted to invest into real estate. But because they had just sold their business and they didn't know how to get started. So he introduced us to them and we taught them how to start lending. And now they have a big lending business. But then from there, it just spread like wildfire and you just start talking to people.
But the biggest thing, and this is why I'm just so thrilled about this Bigger Pockets thing, because both of those people, he said they wanted to invest themselves. They wanted to go out and flip houses. We showed them a better way. We exposed them to, like, you don't got to flip houses to make money. Like, you can be the bank. But what does that even mean? You start having that conversation. And you're like, oh, wow, I can lend money and not have to do the work and not build a team and not get my hands dirty? Yes, you can do that. This Bigger Pockets thing is game-changing for us, bro. You have no idea. It's game-changing for us.
Yeah, because, dude, it's just – and then they live here.
Yes.
So, like, dude, when I was at Ground Zero, when I was on deal number 3 and I lived in L.A., I would go on there – and I was in college. I just graduated from college, in college, that kind of area. I would go in there every day, message as many people as I could. Hey, I'm a local college kid investing in real estate. Like, I see you've been trying to invest here. Because they would show, like, how many deals they've done, where they live. Like, dude. And they were all 30, 40, 50, 60 years old.
Yeah.
I would, let's go and have coffee. I'd love to, like, learn more about you. Yeah. I know I had done more than them.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I would go take them to coffee, tell them about who I am, what I've done, where I'm investing. No pitch at all. Be like, but dude, you email them a week later. Hey, like, how's it going? You know, just checking in or whatever. And it's like, man, I couldn't stop thinking about what you're doing and shit. It's like, how can I get involved? And dude, they would just start reaching out.
Wow. Mm.
That's a gem. Bomb, 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 bomb. That's a gem.
Hey, listen.
It's a gem.
That is gold for us, bro. That is gold.
Are you guys trying to raise money?
Yeah, we always. So we learned a hard lesson recently where we got really good at raising money. We had a good network of people, and then we just stopped reaching out to people. We stopped taking on new investors because we got comfortable. Last year, we didn't take on as many projects because we were afraid about what was going to happen with the interest rates. Another mistake that we made, but hindsight is 2020, because as I said, nothing really affected the South Florida market.
Yeah.
So we stopped raising money, and then now we got into a little pickle earlier this year when we purchased all that real estate. Those same lenders, they still wanted to lend, but at different terms. Some people wanted to start making monthly interest payments. Some people start saying instead of 100%, hey, we'll give you 95% of the total of everything. Yeah. So they're starting to get a little bit antsy when they see these economic reports come out.
Yeah.
And we luckily for us, we had some capital. Again, not Antoine Martel type money, but we had some capital where we was able to get the deals done. And we learned a hard lesson. You should never stop raising money, because if you're anything like any of us at this table, you're always looking for opportunities. You're always going. Mm. And you don't ever want the reason why you have to stop is because of lack of capital. So we're always looking to raise money. We had to learn that earlier this year.
Mm. So. And are you guys raising money for the fix and flips?
Fix and flips, yep. Rentals. Fix and flips and to buy more rentals.
Got it. Yeah, so. How would you use other people's money to buy rentals?
The same way we would with a fix and flip. So most of the times when we buy a fix and flip, in order to buy what we need to buy, it's something that needs to be rehabbed, something that's distressed. So we come in, we may have to kick the tenant out, and we just put hard money on it, the same way we would a flip.
Okay,
so it's the same. No.
So let me ask you the question better. So basically, it's the Burr model, right?
Okay,
so
gotcha.
We use private money to buy. We typically want to be 65 to 68, no more than 70% in on that deal, so that we don't have to leave money into that deal. So we'll use private money to buy it and to renovate it, and then we'll just go get long-term debt on it. And then, you know, get long-term debt, they'll lend you up to 70-75% LTV, and we'll be able to refinance out the hard money lenders.
Gotcha.
Or the private money lenders. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So, but that's another lesson that we learned too, because when we could own way more rentals, rentals, but our model or our thinking was flawed, and we figured that out late last year, because we said when we bought a rental, we need to make at least $400 per door when we purchased
and
that.
Take all the money out.
And now it's just like we're 32, right? We're not even using that money. We're just letting that money build and compound. So instead of having to make $400 today, why not make $150, $200 today? And as you pay down the debt, as you pay down your principal, that's only going to grow. So by the time I'm 50, 60 years old, when I want to start using the money, it's paid off and I'm making more cash flow.
Exactly. And it allows you to get into more deals.
Yes.
And then if you have a $10 million portfolio appreciating at 5%, 3% per year, just the appreciation game, instead of like a $3 million portfolio spitting off a ton of cash, which is great, but then you realize, oh, I don't even fucking use it.
But there's a lesson in that, and that you got to understand at a high level what your end game is. Yeah. We didn't understand. We knew we thought we did, but if we really would have understood that our end game from owning rentals is that we want this to be a retirement plan, we would have purchased more. We were looking at it as, okay, we need cash flow right now. And we were playing the wrong game, even though we knew what the end game was, but we didn't understand it. Yeah, but you get what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
What about you? Do you have a retirement plan?
Oh, man.
He's rich. Why you keep asking this man these questions, man? He's rich. He don't need no retirement plan. He already got a lot of money. Why you keep asking this man? I'm sorry he's disrespecting you. He don't know no better answer.
That's a good question. I don't think about it all that much. I guess just because for me, I know that I'm always going to have a business or multiple businesses that is going to like make me that kind of money, or I'm going to sell a business and get a huge chunk of change. And then there's my kind of retirement plan. And I'll put it in like a high interest savings account at 5% today and just like live off that.
Yeah.
So for me, it's not really like I don't know. I'm more of like a business. I don't know what you guys would consider yourselves, but I'm more of like a business guy that fell into real estate versus like a real estate guy. And I can't wait to build my portfolio of like 1,000 units. And like,
no, we consider ourselves the same though. Business guys that fell into real estate, because eventually, and I think the way you create real wealth in this country or real wealth in general is you need a big cash event, right? So that cash event happens when you sell a business. So for us, that's an opportunity that we are looking for, where we can get into a business, invest into a business, or even start a business to where we can grow, scale it, and sell it. Because like you said, you think about it, you sell a business, even on a low end for 20, 30 million, you cash out 15 million, making 5% on that a year, that's $750,000, almost $1 million a year.
Yeah.
That's good money. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's just, and you're just living off the interest. And for guys like us, we're not going to settle. We're still going to be doing things. We're still going to be involving ourselves in other opportunities. So, yeah, I agree with you.
Speak for yourself, my boy. I'm going out in that skyline over there.
But yeah, I mean, just think about like flip system, right? Like it's, let's say it's worth $20 million today.
Mm-hmm.
I started a year and a half ago. It's like, you know how long that would have, with no outside investors, yeah, no outside money, recurring subscription. Like, it would have taken me how many fucking years to do that with real estate?
Right.
How much headache, how much raising money? I'm like, so it's kind of, it was this unlock to like, I always tried to build a business within the real estate space, but it's hard when you have a physical asset and it's like an open public marketplace.
Yeah.
Versus like having a business where like I have way more control, the margins are way better, and I think it's just a way I think to make fuck you money.
Yeah.
Versus,
what was like that light bulb moment for you to understand that?
I think Alex Hormozy selling Gym Launch and his whole story.
Gotcha.
And how he, because he was, all right, so he had the gyms, right? Do you guys know his story?
Yes, a little bit.
I'm reading $100 million leads right now.
Oh,
I'm
reading that right now. The first time?
Yeah, I mean, I just got the book, but yeah.
Holy shit. All right, I'll give you guys the second book I have. Let's give them a book after.
Yeah, please. Thank you.
Okay, so kind of like us, right? We're in real estate, or we're in real estate flipping houses, wholesaling, trying to like make money via that.
Yeah.
He had the same thing, but it was for gyms. So he had gyms. He had one gym. He was making great money. Then he's like, I'm going to do more gyms or flip more houses.
Yeah.
So he started making more money. That's not passive at all. It was completely active. Yeah. Started hiring employees. And then he eventually got so burnt out. Something happened with his gyms. He slowly had to shut them all down. But he had realized via that he was really great at marketing and sales and filling up the gyms.
Mm-hmm.
What did he do? Started teaching people how to go and do that.
Yeah.
Which is where he started Gym Launch, to help other people launch their own gyms, mm-hmm, or like expose and expand, or like flips. We learned this. Now we're going to go teach other people how to do the same and create wealth with that. And I think seeing his whole journey come full circle to like $100 million exit or $50 million exit, whatever it is, like to see that, and how many fucking gyms would he had need to start to get a $50 million exit versus starting like a company with way better margin. And it was like the same thing, because the margins were super, super small. But then with an education or e-learning or a software company, which he started later, his margins went from, you know, 10%, 20% with the house flips or wholesaling to now, you know, a 30 or 40% margin.
Yeah.
And then having an exit, and somebody wants to buy a business that has a 40% margin instead of like nobody. And the other thing too is like, nobody was ever going to buy Martel Turnkey or a fix and flip company.
Yeah, correct.
There's no value to it. Then the only value is how many more deals can you do and how much more money you can make.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the light bulb moment. It was like, wow, I worked 8 years building Martel Turnkey and it's not worth anything.
Yeah.
I can't sell it. It has my name on the fucking business.
Yeah.
And so that was the kind of light bulb moment for me to be like, all right, I need to do things completely fucking differently, but leverage what I've done for the last 8 years so it doesn't all go to waste.
That's good. That's good. So when it comes to, for you, when it comes to flip system, what's the end goal?
The end goal, I think, is to make it a business without my face and build it up as a brand.
Yeah.
So have it be its own brand that people know and recognize and, you know, like, and that would make the company more valuable so that if I ever did want to exit or sell it, I have the ability to do so.
That's the beautiful thing, though, like you said. And for you guys that are listening, understanding the value of having a brand outside of yourself, right? Because if you're involved in it, you have to go along with it, so on, maybe or maybe not. But, and then earlier to the bigger pockets, to what we're talking about for bigger pockets, to me, I think you're doing a great job by building Flip System, because you can build the same thing that Bigger Pockets did, right?
Yep.
When people think real estate, they think Bigger Pockets.
Yep.
So how do you ever envision that or even think about that to say, hey, how do I make Flip System the next or bigger than Bigger Pockets?
Yes. And that all starts with like this whole thing and creating content as well, because Bigger Pockets was a forum. The forum is not doing very well for Bigger Pockets. They're mostly like a real estate content company now, right? Yeah. Like they're a real estate production company.
Yeah.
Cool. I don't know if you noticed Grant Cardone, he started like his own production company and now he's coming up with all these different shows and shit like that. I think that's the direction that Flip System will go into, where, you know, we have 500 active people. They've done all done a house, so that's like 500 houses being purchased just in the last 12 months. Do you know how many fucking episodes of a TV show I can go and film around the country? Like,
yeah,
we can go take this setup, go to Detroit, Michigan. Yeah, go to Detroit, Michigan, fly the customer there. Cool, we're going to do a story about you, your life, the house you bought, how much you're going to make, your experience. Like, so I think, and that's how you would build the brand of Flip System. Yeah. And that's how people would see it first. It's like, what's Flip System? Oh, it's a company that creates a ton of content online about real estate investing out of state and really speaks out for cities that aren't being spoken about. Detroit, St. Louis, Cleveland, yeah,
dope, dope. So one thing that I guess we share in value is we want Expose and Expand to be a major media player as well, because we understand that whoever has your ear has your whoever has your ear and whoever has your eyeballs is where you're gonna spend your money. So for us, understanding the value of media. So that's for us essentially what we want to do long term with Expose and Expand. So right now it's just the podcast that we have, and it's the real estate education, but we know we have a vision of making it much bigger than that as well.
Yeah.
So we're on the same page with you on that.
Yeah.
The same page.
That's a great idea. With the Flip System, that's a really good idea. You need to execute on that.
We are, yeah. We started reaching out to people last week actually about it.
Okay.
And making just like a ton of videos, like showing people that it's possible. And I also think too, there's like something about making like the news, like, dude, imagine we had like a TV show about like Detroit, Michigan news, and it was all sponsored by Flip System.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, then you would see it on your phone, all over social media, like Detroit, this new development, this new thing here. Not many people like post content like that. And especially if it's like nice, high quality content. So I think, dude, there's so many fucking avenues to take it. Because if you sell the city, then you're selling people not only to move there, but also selling people to invest there.
Yeah.
Just think about like Tulum. Dude, you have a bunch of girls go to Tulum and start filming YouTube videos there. And then it's like, oh, fucking Tulum is sick. And then people spend $1,000 a night going to Tulum.
Yeah.
Then they use that money to build more. And now Tulum has a fucking airport.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
that
like,
That was great what Tulum did. Never even thought about it that way.
Yeah. And just think about like all these, you look at a map of America and you just look at all these markets that are like riddled with crime or drugs or super small cities or have a bad rep. And it's like Flint, Michigan.
Yeah.
Like worst rep in America. Cool. What could we do? Could we go into it, create a media company that talks about the good and highlights of it, or sells it, or there's this new development that's really going to change the nature of that city, and you just keep cranking out content about that city, or Flip System as a company invests in that city first, creates content about what we're doing, and then starts the kind of herd mentality.
I'm glad we're friends. You're gonna be rich, real. You're gonna be even richer. But seriously, that makes. Because I think the landscape of media is so saturated. So who's doing something different? Who's doing something very, very unique?
Yeah.
And I think you definitely are onto something. I'm excited to watch you build that for real.
Yeah,
for
real. So, thank you. Yeah, I'm excited for it too. It's going to be interesting. This is just the beginning. We just started building out the content production team to start doing that kind of shit. So.
And for you, Flip System, that's the only thing you're focused on right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, like, I don't know if I told you guys, but the wholesaling company, completely done. Moved all those people to Flip System.
Yeah.
The title company, I'm very, very hands-off with. Martel Turnkey, we scaled it really, really down. And now it's just pretty much like a sales engine for Flip System clients to sell their houses. So there's like one person that's an employee there. So 99.9% of my attention's on Flip System. And on this year, creating way more content. So creating the vlogs, you know, filming little episodes or TV episodes of the cities that we're investing in, all the people that are investing there and their successes. So yeah, Flip System, like 99% of my day now.
Yeah.
Wow.
Whereas before it was way more fragmented.
Yeah.
It was like Martel Turnkey. I had my own little coaching program on the side and like doing my own deals and the title company and the wholesaling company. I was like on a weekly call. And I was like, dude, fuck this. Like,
But one thing that, so I'm in a group and one of my coaches, he gave me the book called The One Thing by Gary Keller, the guy who started Keller Williams.
Yeah.
And if you look at every billionaire, everyone that's centimillionaire, everyone that has achieved massive success and massive wealth did it by focusing on one thing.
Yeah.
And that's a lesson that we learned last year. So we got rid of all the excess waste, the companies that we were making little to no money in. Yeah. Let's get rid of it. And now, like in like Jerm just said, at the beginning of this year alone, the first month, we purchased $4.5 million worth of real estate because we locked in, we focused, and we cut all the fat, we cut all the bullshit, and said, hey, let's just lock in and we focus. So I think for anyone that's listening to this, understand the power of focus. It's so easy, especially in the world that we live in, for people to, the shiny object syndrome, seven streams of income. And we tell people all the time, that to us is one of the biggest myths, seven streams of income. You don't start focusing on seven streams of income until you have a few million dollars. That's just my belief system.
Yeah.
And when you're making six figures, you're kind of still broke. So you don't have time to focus on seven streams of income. Find a high producing skill or, you know, find a skill that can be high producing for you. Lock in on that and go all in.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. And I think like saving up enough money to actually do some shit too.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Like, dude, so many people make 100K a year, but then they like save $3,000 a year.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, like you don't have any excess cash to be able to do anything with. You can't even put it into a high interest savings account because there's not much there. So like, and I think that just has to go back with like social media and people wanting to flex or whatever. But like, I think there's so many people too that like, I have this a lot too, because I grew up in California, and so a lot of my friends make whatever 50 to 100,000 bucks a year, but they all live in California. I know they're just like drowning with like bills and all this kind of stuff because it's so expensive to live, and it's just, but it's hard to make the jump to leave LA, to leave San Francisco, to go to like a cheaper, more even to here, and you can move to Doral or move somewhere on the, and you know they could save half their money, they wouldn't have to pay any state income tax.
Yeah.
And they would like save double as much as they are in California.
Do you miss the income tax?
No. Not at all.
But I think we as entrepreneurs and business owners are like the outcast, so to speak, but in a good way though, because like the way we operate, the way that we think, a lot of people don't operate that way. And we see it with our family, you know, that have jobs. And I'll give you a perfect example. My sister, I love her to death. And my brother and I said, hey, here's an opportunity for you to start doing something that you wanted to do. We made the investment. And for her, she was like, you know what? This is not for me. And I get it. It's not for you. But at the same time, you got to ask yourself, do I want to struggle for the rest of my life? Or do I want to find something to where I can make some real money that's going to set me up for my future? Because certain times I'm hanging around my family or even our friends we grew up with, and I hear the conversations they have, and I'm like, you're struggling to pay a $300 light bill or $200 light bill? And it's just like, that's not the life I want.
Yeah.
And I told my girlfriend this last night. I was like, look, I will work 20 hours a day for the rest of my life if I have time, freedom, and financial freedom. I don't care. Like, as opposed to going to work a job, and you think about a police officer that makes 60 grand a year, especially here in South Florida, you cannot live off that. You're struggling making that type of money. And then if you work overtime, they're going to take half of what you make in overtime, so you're still struggling. So when we did the math, I'm like, it don't make no sense to have a job.
Yeah.
So that's just my take on it.
Interesting. I think, but also too, you said something interesting, which is like, people think they can leave their full-time job, start a business, and then work the same amount of hours, but make way more money.
Yes.
So it's like you said, because when like 9 to 5 is like fucking easy. It's like, you're not making as much money as like your full potential, but it's also on the like the amount of money you make on an hourly basis that you have to like start thinking about. I was just talking to one of my friends from college. He works in Mexico City. He makes really, really great money. He works at like what's it called when they graduate and they go to New York City and they work in finance? Yeah, they work in Wall Street, but it's kind of like it's like one of the highest paying jobs out of college.
Private equity.
Yeah. Like he works in like a private equity or like investment banker.
Got you. Okay.
Okay. He's an investment banker out of college. I don't know. And then he moved to Mexico City. He probably makes like 150, which in Mexico City is like,
oh, you're balling.
Yeah,
he's balling. A king over there.
And then he was like, dude, he was like, yeah, I work from like 7 to 10 p.m. every day, work all weekends, can't hang out with my family, can't see my girlfriend, can't do this, can't do that. And I'm like, yeah, like that, you should look at your job on like an hourly. And I think they did a study about this, like investment bankers, what they make on an hourly basis is less than like a preschool teacher something like that. Cause they put in so many hours.
Yeah.
You make such great money, sure, but like you have no time or energy to spend it. Yeah. Same thing owning a fucking business though.
Yeah.
Like your income potential is uncapped. You can work as little or as much as you want to.
Yep.
But I feel like a lot of people have this myth that I'm going to leave my full-time job and like flip houses, work 3 hours a month and be rich as fuck.
That's social media. That is the social media age where people think, oh, that's what it's like being a business owner. Because how many hours you work a week now?
Hours per week? Dude, yesterday was crazy. 8:30 to probably 10.
And most business owners who I know, that's what their schedules look like. And then two though, is one, you have to work hard, but then two, we love our business. So it's just like you're constantly thinking about how can I grow? How can I make it better? What can I do? Who do I need to hire in order to get to the next level?
Yeah.
So that's to me, like, I don't know. I can't do it.
Yeah. Or like vacation. Think about it. Like if you're a 9-to-5-er and you're like vacation and it's like, you can just fucking sit there and like not think about work at all. Dude, it sucks to go on vacation and then you have to like check your everything's just on your fucking phone and you feel like you have to check shit or have to look into stuff. So it's like you don't get any of those rest days.
Yeah.
Like it's very difficult. And I get complaints all the time about going on vacation. It's like, aren't you? You're taking a fucking phone call right now. I'm like, I have to take the phone call.
This is money on the other end of this line. Yes, I am taking this phone call. Of course.
Yeah.
Do you ever turn off?
Do I ever turn off? It's hard, man. Yeah. It's hard because you become so addicted to it. Yeah, it's like an addiction, really.
And I think it's just like you're addicted to the success. Like you make, because I remember when we first started making a little money, it was like, man, this is cool.
Oh yeah.
But then you start hanging out with some of your other friends, and it's like
Antoine.
some other friends, and we can go to dinner, and you spend a few grand. I'm like, oh, I'm not there yet. And then he's like, I got to work harder so I can get that. And then for me, do you guys ever feel guilty about working too much? And for us, I want different, because we have kids. So my answer may be different than yours. So what is your answer?
Do I ever feel guilty working? No. I actually feel guilty making other people work like when they're not supposed to be. Like I feel so no, for me personally, no, I don't feel guilty when I have to work super long.
But you're saying when you ask your employees or your team members to work when they're not supposed to, you feel guilty?
Yeah. Like, I'm okay with me working 24/7, but then as soon as somebody, like, all right, let's say we hire, like, a customer success person.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, this happened a couple of weeks. Customer success person, 40 hours a week minimum, 9-to-5 Eastern time. Cool. We had somebody that had to have an onboarding call Saturday. And I was, like, writing the message in Slack, like, fucking hell, I got to make one of these guys, like, work on Saturday, take a 1 hour. It was just a 1 hour phone call. Yeah. They easily raise their hand, but it's just, like, that makes me feel guilty even more, where I'm like, should I just take the fucking call?
Yeah.
So that makes me feel more guilty than like me doing it.
I look at it a little different though. Like one thing I understand about business is culture, right? And the culture is what matters. Even though when we bring people on, we tell them, hey, it's Monday through Friday, but I want to create a culture of let's execute and get things done, whether that's a Saturday, whether that's a Sunday.
I know.
So I think for you, it's just like, what are you guys doing from a culture perspective to help people understand, yes, it's Monday through Friday, but if you need to take a call on Saturday, I want you to happily want to take that call on Saturday.
Yeah. And I think that's a culture that we do have.
Yeah.
Like, everybody's working their ass off. Yeah. Like, you know, the directors or executives that we have, like, dude, they'll sometimes work up till 8 or 10 p.m. at night as well. Wow. Or they're like, drop their kids off to bed, put them to bed, and then, like, check emails for the last couple. Because I'll get emails because they're on the East Pacific. West Coast, and so I'll get emails at like 2 or 1 in the morning, 1 in the morning. So I think we do have that culture, but it still makes me feel guilty to like ask for it.
Yeah.
I think I don't know why. Because you see the vision, and I think your team members see the vision as well.
Yeah.
So I think that's something that you got to work on internally, because if people are willing and they understand the vision, that's one thing that we've come to understand. If people see a vision that's big enough for them to see themselves in, they don't mind going that extra mile. And they obviously see how big the flip system can be.
And if you're not willing to, you know, do the extra work, this is not the place for you. I shouldn't even have to ask you, you know? Those are the type of people that we want around us. Because one thing that I've heard from a few different people, so Charles Koch, who owns Koch Industries, they're a multi-billion dollar family-owned corporation. One of our mentors used to work for him, and the way he operated his business was, he said, look, I'm going to pay you really well to do your job. So I'm not going to give you the extra time off. I'm not going to do all those extra perks that a lot of companies give you. That's not what you're going to get here. But you're going to get paid really fucking well when you work at Koch Industries. Yeah. So I'm giving you the money. So if you need the extra time off, hire a nanny to help with the kids. That was his philosophy.
Yeah, love that.
Yeah. So for me, it's just like you're creating the winning culture. And that winning culture, we got to execute at all costs.
Yeah. What about you?
As far as feeling guilty? I used to, but I don't anymore. Thank my brother for this, because he helped me help my kids understand that I'm chasing my dreams. And you have two type of people that in life, they chase their dream and those that don't. And I had this conversation with our property manager, and he challenged me, he was like, bro, you guys work all the time. Is it really worth it? Et cetera, et cetera. Because I get to see my kids' soccer games. I don't miss anything, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm like, bro, I don't miss anything as well. But there are times where I don't get to tuck my kids into bed. Well, don't you think they're going to miss that, et cetera, miss that when they grow older? And I said, no. And I added childish back. I said, don't you think when your kids get older, are they going to say that their dad settled and didn't chase their dream? Because I said, for me, my kids, every day they get to see their dad living out his dream and doing what he thinks is the best thing to do for his life. And I think that's the best thing as a parent that I could do for my kids. So once I had that realization, it set me free of the guilt. So I don't have any guilt now. Yeah. When my daughter, she tells me, daddy, you don't ever spend time with me. You don't spend enough time with me. I want to spend more time with you. And I say, baby, listen. Like, daddy's chasing his dream right now. But that's why I tell you, when we have our time together, don't be on YouTube, spend time with daddy. Because we get these times, we need to take advantage of it. So I don't feel guilty at all anymore.
Yeah. So for me, I've heard, I don't know where I heard this at. It was like a year and a half ago. And somebody said it was like the biggest form of child neglect is you not chasing your dreams. And you're not showing your kids that. And that's so true. Because you think about how many people are scared. How many people don't chase their dreams because, one, they never got that example as a kid.
Yeah.
They never saw their parents doing it. So they said they don't do it. So that's why they just settle for average. And that's why they just live an average lifestyle. So for me, I'm showing my kids and I'm giving them an example of what it looks like to chase your dream. Uh-huh. Because if somebody tell you chasing your dream is easy, they're fucking lying. Like, it's hard work. Day in and day out, you have to grind.
Yeah.
Right? So, and I'm showing my kids that firsthand. But then they also get to see the benefits, mm-hmm. right? Because so many people say they're chasing their dreams. So many people say they're doing it for their family, but their family never get to experience the benefits. For me, our family experienced the benefits, right? I tell my kids, y'all live a great life. Y'all don't eat leftovers. We go on trips all the time. Like, you know, y'all live a great life. Yeah. And so for me, they're enjoying the fruits of my labor, and they can see, like, when we go on a family trip, when me and him foot the bill and it's 20 grand, 25 grand.
Yeah, I saw that.
Right? Mm-hmm. So, you see the fruits of, you know, you're enjoying those fruits as well. So,
yeah, that's crazy. I mean, growing up, was your guys' parents traveling for work?
We grew up. The story that's perpetuated about the black broke family online, that's our story. My dad was in jail from the time we were 6 until we was 22. My mom was a single parent who had 5 kids who worked at the post office at night and did hair during the day just to supplement her income, just to be able to provide the things that she was able to provide for us. We had a tough life growing up. It was fun. I wouldn't trade my upbringing for anything. Because I think I learned so many lessons as a kid where I see adults struggle with. So for me, I would not trade my upbringing. And you don't know you're poor until you get out into the world. You're like, man, we're poor. But you don't know that when you in that box. So it was, I think my childhood was amazing when I look back on it. I wouldn't say we was poor, but we was almost close to it. But it was great, bro. Like, it taught me real skills that I see a lot of people struggle with. And I see a lot of Americans struggle with right now.
And I tell people all the time, there's purpose behind your pain. So we didn't know we was in the middle of pain when we was growing up, but it was purpose behind it because, one, it produced the men that we are today. And then also, it is like allowed us to operate with ease in chaos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because when chaos happens, that's like, I'm like Batman. You know, Batman operates best in the dark.
Yeah.
So for us, when we're in chaos, it's easy for us. I'm not stressing. I'm not having a nervous breakdown how most people have because I'm used to those chaotic and those stressful moments because of how we was raised. So,
Wow. Crazy. Yeah, for me, polar opposite.
What do you mean? How was you raised? How was
so I was born in Canada, Toronto.
Okay.
And we lived in like a $180,000 duplex in Toronto.
Okay.
And there was like somebody living in our basement floor. And then, you know, like very much middle class.
Yeah.
This was before Toronto blew up. And my dad was making good money there at a US-based company or a global company. And he got a job transfer from Toronto to San Francisco. And so my parents are still together today. We bought a house. My dad had a lot of stock options. So he bought like, this was in 2001, 2002. Tech market was like blowing the fuck up. Yeah. My dad had like a couple $1 million in stock options. He sold just enough money to buy this house, the down payment for this house. So we sold, and the house was $650K or something like that.
Yeah.
So big upgrade from Toronto, but my dad was like, I'm fucking rich. I made it. He sold the $200K of this stock option to buy the house.
Yeah.
And then he just like, fuck that. I'm just going to let the rest of the money sit in there. I'm fucking rich.
Yeah.
Year later, we buy the house. Year later, his couple $1 million right to zero.
Oof.
So now we were in a new country. Didn't have anything, no credit score, nothing like that. Had to buy this car, you know, sell the stock option, buy a car cash, sell the stock, buy the house, like do all this kind of stuff.
Wow.
And my mom didn't have, wasn't working because she wasn't able to because she wasn't American.
Yeah.
And so my dad was only able to work. And then growing up, my dad was traveling for work 5 days a week.
Oh, wow.
So he would leave on Sunday, come back Friday night, Saturday morning, hang out with us for 48 hours, you know, 24, 48 hours, and then he's gone again.
Wow.
So, like, for me growing up, it was, like, all with my mom. And that was for, like, the first – that was probably from when I was, like, 5 years old all the way up to, like, 14 or something like that.
Wow.
So, like, 8 years, maybe 6 years of, like, him doing that, traveling every single week until he got a new local job and didn't have to travel anymore.
Wow.
So – talk about your dad going and working and chasing his dream or whatever. Like for me, I just was like, oh yeah. Like you guys get to hang out with your dad during the week. Like I had no fucking clue because he was going to start to talking to other kids and shit. And they're like, oh yeah, my dad works and comes back every night. It's like, you know, so growing up from a kid's perspective, my dad was not chasing his dream per se, but he was working his fucking ass off so that we can be in this new country.
Yeah.
With, and when a company moves you here, when they sponsor you, you have to work for that company.
Yeah.
So it's not like, oh, I fucking hate my job. Yeah, I'm going to like find a new one. Like, no, buddy. Yeah. Like, you're fucked.
Yeah.
So for me, it was never like, where's my dad or anything like that. Like, it was just like, that's my fucking life. And like, my dad's gone every single week. See him for 24 hours. Hey, it's great to see you. Did you get me a gift? Yeah, here you go. Stuffed animal. And then, you know.
Yeah,
that was kind of the life. So very very different.
Wow.
But I think the last thing that I want to say is just be, we have different lifestyles and we both have made something of ourselves. So it's possible. That's what people need to understand. It is possible, regardless of your upbringing, regardless of what happened to you as a kid, regardless if your parents was there, regardless of all the other bullshit lies we tell ourselves, it is possible for you to go out and make something of yourself. And we all are great examples of that.
So. 1,000,000%. Thanks for coming, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having us, brother.
Thank you for having us. I enjoyed this conversation. Learned a lot about my boy. Yeah. That boy got real money. I got to work a little bit harder. So, and I definitely enjoyed it, man. Thanks for having us.
Yeah,
of
man.
Course.
Thank you for having us.
Where can people find you, reach out to you?
Oh, Mathis Twins, go ahead.
Yeah, so Mathis Twins on Instagram, MathisTwins. Expose and Expand on YouTube is where you guys can find us.
All right. Thanks for watching. Like and subscribe. See ya.